bourbon group in Dallas, a club in Dallas. Had a nice, very nice crowd, and I had come in late and I didn't know you were speaking. I didn't know who was on the program, and I found out that you and Dick was going to speak. I didn't have time to set my microphone up at the speaker stand, so I took a piece of adhesive tape and stuck it up, plastered it up to one of the house speakers out in the middle room there, at the back of the auditorium there, in the present suburban club. They hadn't been in there very long. That was a wonderful message and a wonderful night. And Horace, this is Charlie Mac T at 210 East Davis Street, McKinney, Texas. I've been going around Horace for almost 6 years, taping these state conferences and retreats and the jamborees and the roundup like our wonderful top of Texas. I want you to know, Horace, that we all up in North Texas love you, and we certainly miss you at the top of Texas Amarillo this year. This is October the 27th, 1961. Horace, I wish you could have been present when Les Ross got up to announce that all those that wanted to help the state to drop a little change in the box, and I'll tell you that box filled up in a hurry up there. We're just glad to do it for you, and it makes me so happy to do my little part to bring you this tape. And I had promised your good wife down at the Institute on Alcohol Studies that I was going to send you a tape with your talk on it, but I failed to get your address. Well, I later found that I could, it would be delivered to you if I would send it to the suburban group. Well, I've been so busy making copies, and I just keep putting it off. You know how those things are. And so I told a bunch of them up top of Texas that I wanted to have the privilege of sending you one of your own talks. You count on me for that. So here it is. And Harsha, my wife, standing there, and she enjoyed your talk. We played it back many, many times. And she said, remind you that I'd had two heart attacks in May. They were not serious, but it slowed me down. But I love this taping and spreading the message. It takes a lot of my time, but I enjoy it. I go to these places and take orders and send tapes back to the people that don't want to be bothered with their tape recorders. Incidentally, while on that subject, I had an order earlier this week for all of the Alcohol Studies Institute in Austin for copies of all the tape there from a chaplain over in Japan. I had made him one and sent to him before he went over. He must not have been there too long, because that was, as you know, in July. August, July, I believe. July, yes. 16, 17, 18, 19. I didn't get over there until the 17th, which wasn't much going on Sunday. And I taped all that. Got some wonderful tapes, too. And so I'm going to cut this now and let you hear your little buddy now. Good friend, Dick Green.
Head immediately with our meeting. And our first speaker tonight is one of the men who have worked for the founders of AA and who has done a tremendous job in the continuous growth of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in these United States. I would like for Dick to come up here.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you. My name is Dick Breen, who, following the grace of God and the 12 steps and men and women just like you, my sobriety date is still September 1st, 1941. This is a tremendous occasion. And what it means to the growth of AA to have a place like this, and what it means to a former Bowery bum like myself to walk in here because I'm a clubroom guy. When I say I'm a clubroom guy, don't you get upset because you happen to belong to a smaller group and think that I am talking against anything. Because any way a man can get sober, a woman can get sober, God bless them. But men like myself who are walking down the street with their head down, nowhere to go, stinking, drunk, it's a pretty hard job for us to find a place unless it's an open club room such as you have tonight. And it was through an open club room just like this, not as elaborate of course, but an open club room, small and 17 of us, that I found my way into Alcoholics Anonymous one night. And I found it by mistake. A lot of people have been lucky now in the progress and the growth of AA. That people know of it, people have seen it, people hear it on radio, television, papers, magazines, everywhere. But in those days, we were underground. There weren't any ads in the paper. There weren't any telephones you could pick up that says Alcoholics Anonymous next to them. And you were lucky if you found it. And the stigma of alcoholism then, well, of course, was much greater than it is today. Is it a stigma today in a lot of places? Yes. But through people like you who have pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and made the world recognize that alcoholism is a disease, and an alcoholic is worth helping. Through the efforts of people just like you, all over the world tonight, and 57 foreign countries, plus Canada and the United States. Why? Because men and women, just like you, stuck together and made this thing possible. I won't give you a blow-by-blow description of my days of alcoholism, because if you're an alcoholic, and I have said that I am, I was, I am, and I will be until I die, and if you're an alcoholic, you know my story. When I tell you that I've walked from the Bowery's and I've done everything else that a guy can do, then if you've been there, you know just exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't been there, you don't know and you never will know. And thank God, through His infinite wisdom, men and women, a lot of them right here tonight, haven't had to walk up and down the streets with their head down around the Bowery. But I happen to know that you don't have to make a Bowery of Skid Row to hit there to hit the Bowery. You can hit the Bowery between silk sheets in the most elaborate home that there happens to be in Dallas. And that's what we found out today, too. The hidden alcoholic, the man who isn't recognized across the coming from across the railroad track. I wasn't born on the Bowery. I was born in a little town called Lewiston, Maine. That's down east to you and down east to me. My mother's name was Nellie O'Rourke and my dad's name was Johnny Breen. And there were 7 of us in the family, plus mother and father makes 9. And I'm the guy that had to be the alcoholic. And today I have 3 sisters still living and a brother and myself. And I'm the only one that was recognized in the family of 9 as being alcoholic. Yet my dad was in the liquor business. But you don't have to belong to someone who's in the liquor business to be an alcoholic. So much is known today of what you can do about an alcoholic that wasn't known then. But I was known then as the kid around that couldn't handle his whiskey, that seemed to cause a little trouble here and there and getting worse all the time. Had the usual pretty good schooling and certainly a background like all of you had that I knew about God before I ever found Alcoholics Anonymous, as you have known too. Just that I had turned my back and chose my way instead of the way of my family or anybody else. And it wasn't long until I was an alcoholic. It seems strange to say, now how old were you? Oh, I might have been 16, I might have been 17. Now that I can check back, now that time has gone by, yes, I was an alcoholic early. Because I roamed from one prep school to another to get an education and then from one college to another. If I didn't flunk in my studies, I just flunked in my whiskey drinking, that's all. No one seemed to like it very well. But nevertheless, that's what I accomplished in all of my travels and all of my going around and whom I met. There was only one thing that concerned me. It wasn't how much money I had or how little I had. The idea was, when will I get the bottle of whiskey? When will I make it comfortable for myself to have all the whiskey that I want? Everything in life revolved around a bottle of whiskey. A bottle of whiskey so I could get drunk tonight to lie down either in between the soap sheets or to finish up in the gutter. And ultimately, naturally, I worked my way away from everyone. And in 1940, I was in a position where no matter what the phone cost, whether it was a nickel or whether it was a dollar, I didn't have it. And there wasn't a person in the world that I could call up for help of any sort. And naturally, I drifted down and down. And I'm one of the guys, too, that made up my mind that I was going to die drunk. I knew it was happening to me, and I couldn't do anything about it. There are a lot of theories today about what a man should have done, but they didn't work. If they had, they would have been in existence then. And so I finally made up my mind that death was the only way I could get out of this world, and I didn't have courage enough to do it, although I tried it. And finally, I made up my mind I'd make the Bowery's and stay there with men and women who understood me. I didn't believe that anybody else in the world could understand me. And one night in 1941, I walked into a place just like this. I don't like to call it in my mind a club room. I like to call it a canopy that God put on earth for men and women just like you and I. A place where a man that's destitute or a woman that's destitute can walk through the door and be understood. To feel the warmth and the understanding of one alcoholic for another and come out of that terrible days that we're all in with the hope that maybe you're telling the truth and possibly there is a chance to live again. And by mistake, I went by a club room one night in Washington, D.C. And they greeted me with open arms. Even though I was three-quarters drunk, I wasn't boisterous or obstreperous. I made myself comfortable because I went in there for I had an objective. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. All I knew was that somebody was up there preaching to drunks, and I knew one of them. And that night, I got 100% of what I walked in there for. I wanted a bottle of booze, and I got it. Because the guy that knew me gave me money enough to buy a bottle of booze. And they were very glad to get rid of me, and I don't blame them. But I came back the next night. Because I found something in that room that night that's in this room tonight, and the other room that's like it in the world today. And I didn't understand it. How could I? All I knew that I could feel the warmth, I could feel the understanding, and I knew somehow, somewhere, I was welcome to walk back, because I did. I walked back in again at the night of August 31st, and I wasn't looking for a bottle of booze. I'm too sick. I'd already had two convulsions that day, and I found a place I could hide that night. Found some place where I knew that I wouldn't have to lie in a dungeon or a back room and get my head beat off. If I could just possibly get with these people, and I did. I found that club open that night, and one guy there, and he sat there and begged me a bottle of Coke and held me down while I shook it out. Because there were plenty of people there who had the understanding, as you have it here tonight. And little did I realize that it was possible, and I went a long time before I found it was possible. Because I couldn't believe it. Regardless of who got up, regardless of what they said, regardless of how many times I looked at the book or tried to study this deal, I just couldn't believe it. I was afraid to put a white collar on again. I was afraid of that terrible humiliation that I would have to go through and that degradation that I would have to go through when I got drunk again. I hadn't seen people stay sober. These people said they were, but I just couldn't believe it. I've seen men and women stay sober before, and you can have it. I've seen lots of them, not too many, but quite a few of them. But most of them would tell around of what to do, of how they did it, and why you should just use your willpower, and it was nothing to it. either go to a church or just use your willpower and quit. And try to sober out everybody else in the world by, well, the word prohibition. They became prohibitions. And I don't like that kind of sobriety. I've heard many of them say to me, well, I don't need your fellowship. I did this by myself. God bless them. I had no argument with them. I only have a question for them. Who belongs to your club? And I've yet to find one of them, man or woman, who sobered up by himself and kept it to himself and sat in the corner with it, that has any kind of a club or any kind of understanding or anybody that ever joined it. So that kind of sobriety to the world hasn't helped anybody that I know about, except the individual himself who gets it. And gradually, as time went by, I began to find that thing called friendship. There are a lot of ways to find it, Mayway, AA, but you have to find it your way. I knew there was a program of 12 steps. I knew it composed of 200 words. I know one of them said alcohol, but the therapy of understanding I didn't understand. I couldn't grasp what they were doing. And I became one of those clubroom lawyers. Perhaps you've seen them in AA, I don't know, but I was one of them. If you put the door at the end of the hall, I didn't like it, it should be in the middle. If you had red carpets on the floor, I wanted gray. If the coffee was made by one guy, I figured the other guy could do a better job. In other words, I became like a lot of people. I became a great practitioner. I knew everything. In fact, just a few months of sobriety damn near ruined me. Other people, it does them a lot of good. 10 months after I was sober, I made up my mind I'd come to the end of my road. I hadn't listened. I'd been to meetings with my ears closed and my mouth open. And I made up my mind to get drunk, and I nearly did it. Because I had all the equipment that a guy needs to get drunk with, to get drunk right, I thought. And I moved up into Virginia, and a girl at a table one night, an alcoholic, but not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, stopped me with these words. Go ahead and take a drink. Go ahead, with tears running down her face, because she'd seen me plenty of times rolling in the gutter. And she said, go ahead and take that drink, Dick. And there were 5 of them at the table. You go ahead and take that drink and you'll be just like us. Go ahead and take the drink. You'll be just like us. And with that, I came back to AA without the drink. And from that day in, I've never had an urge to go out and grab a bottle. Now, don't mistake me that I haven't had the urge to take a drink. But the time hasn't come when I've clung to every one of you. When the time hasn't come when it seemed like blood would come out of my ears. When I knew I couldn't make it through the night. When I knew that everything that you've told me and everything that I've heard, that I just couldn't sustain myself. But I remember, too, that this was too, Joe Pat. And I remember, too, that there has never been a situation yet that a drink would help. And I came back where I found my sobriety, where I found my guidance, before I took the drink and walked back to the guys and the gals that I knew in here, that I knew had the answer for me and for everybody else in the world who is an alcoholic. Because today, in my mind, there isn't an alcoholic alive, and I don't care whether he's black, blue, or green, or what his religion or his lack of it is. He's suffering. Suffering from a disease called alcoholism, and he knows not where to go. And that's why I say the most important guy in the world in this club room is not the guy that's in here tonight for his first time. I say he's the guy and the gal that we've left behind us. You found it. Whether you're here 20 minutes, 24 hours, or 24 years, you're a pretty lucky guy or a gal. You're the one that God's blessing has been handed right in the palm of his hand to you. It's the guy that hasn't been able to see the hand yet. It's the guy that I'm worried about. And the guy the world is worried about because millions of them are out there tonight. And the progress that we've made has been wonderful. Yes, it has. But we don't even pick up the alcoholics that have been made today. But time. Give us time. We've talked about it. You're talking about 11 and 12 years in a lot of your groups today, 10 years all the way down. And time and understanding is coming in now, like it is amongst the people that are here tonight. People who have found a little time in AA, but have found damn little time to stay away from it, therefore they're sober. People who realize that they have a disease called alcoholism, and the only place in the world that they can find any help for it is right in here. People who are making it possible for guys and gals like myself to wander through these doors all over this man's world to find the same thing that I found. I thought the other night, not too many nights ago, when your first Sputnik, or whatever you call it, went up in the air in competition with the Sputnik, I stood in the shores right south of Cape Canaveral, waiting for it to go up, which it didn't that night. And it was a clear night and a moonlight night, and a beautiful night. Everything was perfect for him, for a man to send a little object into the air that was going to astound the world and compete with other people. And as I looked into the sky and saw millions of stars and a great big harvest moon, and I wondered if God was smiling down on us at the beach that night, looking up at all the wonders that he created, and we're looking for a little minute thing to float around in the air. And naturally it brought back one of the greatest things that's floating around in the world today to me, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous. To the men and women who are suffering on earth that needed it. And I wondered in his infinite wisdom how, why, and where, of which I'm not supposed to know, of where we go in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where in our struggles and our fights and our arguments which we've had, we're human first and alcoholic second. And pretty hard sometimes to understand each other. But always in front of us if we can keep it. If we stay united, the guy and the gal behind us stands a chance. If we divide, then I don't know. I don't believe in a vicious God. I don't believe in one that would punish me with a club and so forth. That I've got over a long time ago. But I don't see how a God in all his infinite mercy could look down on a man or a woman and smile with at least a sense of security for them, to turn their back on where they come, this alcoholic phenomenon. Turn their back on something that he's put in the palm of my hand and your hand. Every one of you that are here from 24 hours on up are dealing in life and death. I know of no greater thing in the world than dealing in life or death. And it's possible right in the palm of your hand to decide a man or a woman's fate with just a few words. And in just a few words, I'll try to tell you of how I understand on calling on an alcoholic. I've heard too much of it lately. How do you do it? Why don't you ask Evie? Evie went up and called on a guy, and the guy didn't even want to see him. And the guy eventually got sober. And the guy's name is Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson called on a guy named Doc out in Akron, Ohio. God bless his soul, he's someplace you can't ask him tonight, in the heaven that was made for him. But he didn't ask for it either when a guy named Bill called on him. So from the first three guys, take your lesson. Whatever you're big enough to do and whatever you think you can do, because if you're in here 24 hours and you're sober and you want to help a guy or a gal, it comes from here, not from here. And in your heart, if you feel like you want to help somebody, you go out and do it your way, not my way, or not the way any one of the deacons that I know, including myself, might tell you. Go buy your book. Go out and see the guy or the gal and tell him whatever you want to tell him. Be because God has put in the palm of your hand, I said the answer. And whatever you say from your heart to help a guy or a gal is right. No matter what you say. The answer's there, and how he'll get it or how he won't get it, I don't know. I don't know those answers. I don't want to know those answers. But above all, I know it will work. And I don't have to do anything but open my eyes right here and look around the room at the men and the women that I've met since 1947 on my first trip to Texas. Up until today, to see them what they were then and to see them as they are now. I live in a world of miracles because miracles are all around me, right in front of me, working and working 24 hours a day. And they'll continue to work if you'll let them, if you'll help, if you'll stay in the unity and practice some of the things that we preach. And I say that lightly, because most of you belong to some Christian faith. You either belong to one church or another, and that has nothing to do with the disease called alcoholism, because no one's in this room tonight to get saved. You're in here because you have a disease called alcoholism, and that's why you came in here. And that's what the treatment of Alcoholics Anonymous is, to help you with your disease called alcoholism. And when you become clear enough to think in your own right, you have the choice. And it says right in our 12th step, God, as you understand him. And you understand him your way, and I'll understand him my way. And never those points will meet in AA. I'm going to work AA the way I see it, the way you've taught me, and take what I can take and my ideas of how far can I go without taking a drink? And gradually, the basis of all your life in this fellowship is sobriety. Call it what you may, call it good, bad, average, anything. I don't care what you call it. But sobriety is the basis to everything that you have. And you have a mind of your own like I have. Worth it. Do what you can do, and go as far as you can go. Join what anything you want to join. What difference does it make? But don't forget, there's a door that swings both ways. In this club, in every other meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world, and you have your choice of it. And all of it's free if you have that sobriety and work for it. Every bit of it is yours if you want it. I can look down with so much pleasure tonight, even to the rose in my lapel, to a guy who I went on his honeymoon with him 8 years ago Sunday night. That's why I have the rose. And perhaps the guy thinks, I've never helped that guy. You bet he has. And I can look at many and many a guy in this room and many a gal. Don't forget that gal. There are many women in this room. Not any place outside, right here. Men, had you not taught me what you have already taught me, had you not sustained me and held me, I wouldn't be standing here tonight, because I owe an awful lot to my Texas AA for the sobriety that I have tonight. I'm not bragging about my length of sobriety, but don't you think a minute that I'm apologizing for it. I didn't get it alone. We got it together. There are no personal victories in this deal. They come with effort. They come with time. And you earn them. But along the line comes those guys and the gals in the room here I'm talking about. The friendship, the love, the warmth. And if you want it, you can have it. And if you don't want it, there's something that ails you. Because no greater thing in the world has God ever put on earth than the association and the love and the warmth of men and women just like you. I wish I could had a wish, like Aladdin's lamp, that I had one. And if I hadn't, through the grace of God, I would simply say, may the rest of your life be a sober one. God bless you.
Thank you, Dick, for that wonderful message, and thank you for being with us. I'm going to get along with this program. You often listen to me talk anytime, but you can't hear people like me.